Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, I give you my exclusive view on the death penalty, the show Ozark, a little bit of monetary theory, interest rates, the economy, and so much more. Before we dive into it, type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and give us those 5-star reviews. Thanks so much, everybody, for tuning in. You guys are going to love this episode. I know it. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
First question. Hi, Charlie. Thank you for all that you do. As a black pastor, conservative, and Trump supporter, one of the notions that is prevalent among the black community is the belief that President Trump inherited a booming economy from President Obama. I know that this is ridiculous. However, I have not been the most equipped with the statistics to disprove this, and I want to ask you, how would you respond? Thank you for your help and time, Pastor Robert.
Well, it's a great question. So you can actually see how good of an economy President Trump created just in the last couple weeks. It took a global pandemic, everyone staying in their homes, people literally buying and doing nothing, oil cratering, months of shutdown for us to get to the best moment of the Obama economy. Think about that. It took months of people doing nothing for us to get to the crowning achievement of Barack Obama. President Trump achieved the lowest ever black unemployment rate. President Trump achieved the lowest ever black unemployment rate. President Trump achieved the lowest ever Latino unemployment rate, Asian American unemployment rate. Barack Obama did none of those things. The economy is so good, President Obama was trying to take credit for it. And guess what? President Trump built the greatest economy in American history, and he'll build it again. And again, the best that Obama got to, the best, was the moment when nothing happened for months. And now, President Trump, the market went down to right around where it was when President Trump got inaugurated. Now it's already up again, another 30%, and God willing, we'll get it back up there again. But look, it's very tempting to want to say that President Obama, you know, really pioneered us through that time after 2008. His stimulus did not work. We had anemic economic growth, mediocre results. And I can tell you from business people all across the country, the day that President Trump got elected was a shot in the arm and reinvigorating. And once we get out of this shutdown and we're able to reopen America, we'll start to see that American renaissance reopen in a very special way. Next question.
Charlie, what is one thing you think our generation does that is a time waster? And what do you think we should do more of? And that's Edward from DC.
So I think that someone needs to create an app that has basically a ticking time bomb that only allows you a certain amount of time on social media every single day. Literally, you're not allowed to get into Instagram or Twitter if you do more than 10 minutes, 15 minutes, or 20 minutes a day. I, for one, have deleted my social media apps from my phone. Still have it on my desktop computer if I need to access it, or I go through kind of just people that have access to my Twitter. If I want to get a tweet up, I just draft it up, send it to them. It is such a time drain in a way that I can't describe. And it's not exactly you're pursuing enlightenment when you're just endlessly on social media flipping through what other people are doing. And it is a facade. It's far from reality. It is vapor. It is not actually what's happening. And studies are showing that during this shutdown and during this quarantine, usage of social media has gone up dramatically. People are using more and more social media than ever before. And again, if you're using YouTube and you're watching videos on Descartes, Aristotle, or Marcus Aurelius, or Rousseau, brilliant. There's some terrific YouTube content out there, by the way. You could watch endless amounts of lectures on very thoughtful analysis. But if you're basically on social media doing nothing more than just flipping through nonsensical content, just trying to waste time, that's exactly what you're doing. You are wasting time. And so that's one thing that prior generations did not have. They had their own equivalents of time wasting. But every single moment that you are given is a blessing from God. Use it. Use it to your optimal capacity, whether that be strengthening your arguments, becoming more intelligent, gaining in wisdom. And that's one thing that I just think that young people do far too much of. Listen to more podcasts, flip through Instagram less. Next question.
Charlie, what do you mean when you say the left doesn't care about America? I want to agree with you, but it seems that there is no way that these leaders really want what is bad for our country. Or do they? Can you please elaborate? Dennis from Colorado.
Thank you, Dennis, for your question. And again, we're reading off questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. A previous episode, I did a provocative thought exercise. We've gotten great response to this episode. What if I hated America? And I make the argument, ask the question, if I hated America, I would want to see America endlessly shut down. I would not want to see people go back to work. In fact, if I was overseas cheering for the demise of America, I would love to see these shutdowns happen. I want to make a distinction between liberals and leftists. Liberals are like Alan Dershowitz that want what's best for America. They just have a different way of getting there. A liberal is like Joe Manchin from West Virginia, who wants what is good for America. He just has a different way of getting there. They are in the vast minority of the Democrat Party. Nancy Pelosi does not want what's best for America. She is in front of her $24,000 fridge in San Francisco while the Small Business Association Payroll Protection Act has totally expired of money. I know business owners that are furloughing and laying off dozens of employees, hundreds of employees right now because that fund has been totally and completely exhausted. It's desperate times out there. She does not want what is best for America. She is a despicable, self-centered politician. I don't think people want what's best for America when they're okay with 3,000 abortions a day happening in America. Why is it that during the State of the Union for 3 years in a row, the Congressional Black Caucus, which is all Democrats, stared silently, somber, when President Trump announced the lowest ever black unemployment rate, the lowest ever black poverty rate, and the most success and the highest wage gains in the history of the black community? They looked upset. They looked angry. It's because they don't want what's best for their communities. They want power. The left is pathologically driven so that they can be in control. It doesn't matter if America is totally destroyed. They just want to be in control. You think of this like Game of Thrones. The left, they're like Cersei Lannister. They don't care if there's anything left to rule. They just want to be the ruler. They'll burn it all down. They don't care about the amount of suffering. They don't care about the amount of carnage. They just don't. And if they did, they would put their politics aside and negotiate, compliment the president when he is correct, and applaud the success that America was experiencing before the pandemic. When the pandemic strikes, they don't actually want what's best for America. Instead, they try to push forth the most radical left-wing pipe dream ideas like Green New Deal, more abortion funding, $25 million to the Kennedy Center, $75 million for NPR and PBS, and that's just the beginning, $350 million to illegal immigrants. Gavin Newsom, whose people say, oh yeah, he's this wonderful governor. He's a left-wing hack, anti-American, pro-illegal, open border, abortion-funding Marxist activist who is the governor of California. Now, Gavin Newsom is now giving $125 million in cash payments to illegals all throughout the state of California. We should be deporting illegal immigrants. Illegals. I don't even want to call them immigrants. In fact, I don't want to use the word immigrant anymore. They're foreign nationals illegally harboring themselves in America that have compromised our laws, cut in line, and have undermined the entire process of legally entering the United States. Gavin Newsom wants to reward them and give them $125 million. Well, guess what? Instead of rewarding their law breaking, they should be deported back to their home country. This should not be a controversial position. In any sort of industrialized country around the rest of the world, if you illegally domicile yourself in that country, you will be deported. But the left, they know through mass migration of people that do not necessarily share our values or our worldview, that are in compromised positions, they can use those compromised positions, such as they're not citizens of the country, to get them to vote for them, to support their politics, and use it as a perpetual fear-mongering tactic. So yes, I do understand that it is a hard thing to digest and swallow, but ask yourself the question, if someone who wanted what's best for America, how could you possibly oppose a border wall? If you want what's best for America, how could you possibly not want to replenish the Small Business Association funding? And maybe they will replenish it, but at the recording this podcast, they have not. How could you be okay with 3,000 abortions a day? How could you not be happy about the lowest ever black unemployment rate, Hispanic unemployment rate, and Asian American unemployment rate? It's because they care more about their worldview. They care more about getting towards political power than actually what is best for the prosperity of the American people. It used to say that, well, politics ends at the shoreline, that essentially we can agree to disagree on domestic politics, but internationally, we'll always agree. Well, the left, they are going to be the ones that get in the way of us holding the Chinese Communist Party for the death, the carnage, and the suffering that they have inflicted on the American people. Senator Tom Cotton went on Fox News today and last night, and he was recently on our podcast. You can go back in the podcast archives and look up Senator Tom Cotton. Senator Tom Cotton said that China and the Chinese Communist Party is responsible for every single death from this virus. That is a very strong statement, one that I tend to agree with. But it's the left, it is the Democrats that will prevent any sort of recourse from us going against the Chinese Communist Party. Nancy Pelosi gets upset that the World Health Organization, which should be called the Wuhan Health Organization, had their funding cut. They do not want what's best for America. They want what's best for themselves and their twisted, backwards, sinister worldview. Stop giving the left the benefit of good intentions. They do not deserve it. They don't give it to us. Do not give it to them. Next question.
Charlie, what is your stance on the death penalty? I think that harsh punishment and quick death for the worst in society seems reasonable, but at the same time seems kind of harsh. What do you say? And that's Aaron from Georgia.
So this is one thing where I actually take not a doctrinaire approach or perspective to this particular issue. In fact, my view on this issue, I think, is growing in conservative circles, but I'm going to tell you exactly what I believe of the death penalty and why I believe it. But first, I want to tell you about Credible.com. Credible.com is an online marketplace that gets you pre-qualified student loan refinancing rates from up to 10 different lenders. Are you being crushed by the cartel of the colleges? Are you worried about student loan debt? Are you up in the middle of the night just worrying about how you're going to pay the interest on the student loan debt because maybe the job market is not the way it wants to be? If that is you, you could benefit from Credible.com. With the lower rate, you could save on interest or lower your monthly payment. With a shorter loan term, you could get debt-free faster. You could consolidate all your student loan bills in one place. Credible customers have given awesome reviews of how much better their lives have been after refinancing their student loans. On Credible, you see actual pre-qualified rates from up to 10 different lenders. It only takes a couple minutes to check rates. Checking rates doesn't impact your credit. They never sell your data, so you won't receive spam and phone calls from dozens of lenders. So please visit Credible.com/Charlie. That's Credible.com/Charlie. Credible.com/Charlie. This is your way out of debt. Do it. Credible.com/Charlie. If you refinance your student loans, you get a free $200 gift card. It's free cash. Credible.com/Charlie. Great partners of the show. Every person that has student loan debt should go to Credible.com/Charlie. They are the compass. They are the roadmap for you to get out of debt. Credible.com/Charlie. So my stance on the death penalty, I'm actually totally and completely opposed to the death penalty. And I'm going to give you the conservative reason why every conservative out there should be against the death penalty. But let me first say this. Personally, as a human being, I see some of these murderers, these rapists, and these maniacs, and I say to myself, we should put a bullet in that person. Yeah, I'm the first one to say it. I'm not trying to act like I'm above the temptation for harsh punishment, death, and murder for the worst people in society. But do you want your government to act on the same impulses that you have? That's a very fundamental and important question. And I come to the conclusion, absolutely not. I want my government to be restrained. I only want to give government a specific amount of power and punishment that should be used sparingly and very carefully. Reason number one, far too often, the death penalty is applied on innocent individuals. I could list name after name after name. So for example, since 1973, through DNA exculpatory evidence, there are 165 people that have been killed under the death penalty wrongly. Now, maybe 165, maybe out of 165, some of those people really did, and maybe a trial would have showed that, and the DNA evidence was messy. Let's say it's 100. So we have wrongfully executed 100 individuals conservatively since 1973. I am not okay with that. I am not okay with the innocent loss of life, where the downside and the worst case of continually keeping that person in prison in perpetuity is a far reasonable trade-off of killing somebody. Because when you kill somebody, you can't undo that. If you keep them in prison, the only way you could undo that is potentially releasing them back in society and allowing them whatever years they might have left. So that's number one, innocent individuals being killed wrongly under the death penalty. Number two, I, as a conservative, limited government person, do not want to give the power of our government to be able to execute our own citizens. I just don't, because I believe they will abuse that power. As soon as you give government the power to take our life away, I know for certain that every power you give the government can and will be abused. And now I know what you're probably saying, well, Charlie, it would only be used against really, really bad people. I already made the argument that it's been used against innocent people. But be careful what power you give the government. Very careful. Do not trust the government to act morally or correctly when you give them the power to do something that could potentially be abused. There is no greater abuse of power than the termination of life. We as conservatives should be reluctant to give power-hungry left-wingers the power to be able to eliminate life. When you are willing to give a power to the government, imagine the person in government you detest the most having that power. Do you want Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer to have the power to terminate people that they deem guilty? Now, obviously, they might not be in that position, but people like them might be in that position. People they know might be in that position. Reason number three why I'm against the death penalty. I believe in a doctrine of life that we must be consistent in protecting the dignity of life from the womb to the tomb. Now, the counter argument to this is, well, Charlie, the murderers did something wrong, and obviously the person in the womb didn't, so I could be pro-life and pro-death penalty at the same time. We must be consistent in the use of force and the funding of that force against our own citizens. The way that many people view us, they view us as hypocrites and inconsistent while we're fighting for individuals in the womb and the sanctity of life, while also arguing for quick terminations of life and the death penalty. And guess what? I, like many people listening to this podcast, might be pro-death penalty. I would like nothing more than some of these maniacs to be killed. But that's not up for me or for you to decide. You want an impartial, sober, blind justice system. Remember, Lady Justice should be blind to any sort of biases or impulses that we have. You want a deliberate justice system that can be fairly implemented and deliberate in the way that it exercises power. And the third thing is actually, believe it or not, from a fiscal conservative view, the death penalty is actually more expensive than life in prison. You might say, how on earth is that possible, Charlie? Well, it's because the death penalty has so many different forms of appeals, of additional court hearings, of judge costs, of public defender costs. It's actually a multiple more expensive than actually life in prison. And so in the question, you say, well, Charlie, I want a harsh punishment for people. Well, unfortunately, the Constitution does not allow for cruel and unusual punishment. That's fine if you want it, but we got to stay yoked and anchored to the United States Constitution, which does not allow for a cruel and unusual punishment. But some people might say, but Charlie, is it that unusual? Yes. Executing somebody is unusual. It is done sparingly. Historically, it is not unusual, but thankfully, we have come above some of the horrific practices of what's been done historically. There's lots of things that were done historically that used to be considered usual that we now consider to be cruel and unusual. For example, slavery. So yes, I would consider the execution of an innocent person to be morally as awful as slavery, both of which is taking someone's life, freedom, and liberty away. So that's my stance on the death penalty. It is not within the conservative mainstream. It's something that I disagree with on a lot of conservatives about, and it's something that I think there's a lot of good discussion around. You can email me, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com, if you disagree.
All right, next question. Charlie, who is one liberal you respect?
So there's a couple. I really respect Alan Dershowitz. I think he's super smart and super fair. Look, a liberal is someone who wants what's best for America. They generally believe in markets. They do believe in a heavier hand of government. They might argue for good government, but they're not a Marxist. They're not a socialist. They're someone that is very fair and thought-provoking. They're hard to find, though, because there's signs that people on the left are just so nasty and so committed to the total and complete destruction of everything we care about. They're obsessed with identity politics. They're pathologically focused on the destruction of the Judeo-Christian tradition. Few of them believe in God. It's just very hard to find common ground with a lot of leftists. But Sam Harris is another one. He's a free speech, atheist, naturalist, humanist, liberal. I do not believe or condone in his, let's just say, beliefs in God, because he doesn't believe in God. Or Peter Bedrosian, who was involved in the grievance studies affair. where they published a bunch of hoax papers in academic journals as part of their criticism of gender studies. Again, this would have been one of the greatest pranks if a liberal would have done it to a conservative in alleged religious studies. But Peter Bedrosian basically totally hoaxed the academic left, and they fell for it. It was awesome. So there's very few liberals out there. Actually, we're looking for liberals, credentialed liberals that have followings that want to come on the Charlie Kirk Show for long form interviews, debate, and discussion. And we actually are building a world-class podcast studio to be able to do that long form. And we are going to have some atheists on as well, where we can cross-examine the belief in nothingness, which is something I don't have enough faith to believe in. So, but yeah, there are a couple liberals out there I respect. I try to have mutual respect for individuals and their worldview. I always try to come across at it from there. But more times than not, the more I see why they believe what they believe much more in a fundamental destruction of everything that it works and everything will hold near and dear in our country. Next question.
Charlie, what is one thing you would tell your 18-year-old self? Garrett from Texas.
Well, thank you, Garrett. And again, we're reading questions from freedom@charliekirk.com. You send in your questions, we will read them on air and answer most of them. If I could tell my 18-year-old self one thing, I would probably tell what I tell 18-year-olds all the time, which is just continually be disciplined, focused, and care much more about how you act morally than what people think of you. And again, that's what I tell 18-year-olds all the time, which is, if you're very focused on a goal, if you believe it, then it's true. You can achieve anything that you put your mind to. And when I was 18 years old, I probably would have told myself to focus even more on the doctrine of Christianity, because in the early years of Turning Point, I probably could have talked about that even more and been even more focused on it. Not that I strayed away from the faith, I just didn't emphasize it as much. But for 18-year-olds out there right now, and that are maybe deciding to go to college or not. I never went to college. It was a great decision for me. Took a gap year, ended up being a gap career, and something I'm very thankful for, and something that I'm going to use that now. Gap year became a gap career. I like that. But look, not everyone needs to go to college. We need more welders, plumbers, electricians, HVAC, police officers, firefighters, entrepreneurs, data coders or computer coders, whatever they call them. Act morally and work hard, you're going to do great. College does not teach you how to work hard, and it definitely does not teach you how to act morally. Every single self-indulgence that you do not want a young person to come across, if those parents listening, that's what you'll find on a college campus. And I'm not saying all colleges are bad. If you want to be an architect, a lawyer, a doctor, something specific, and you want to graduate with a certification, college is, of course, necessary for you. That's not what college has become. College has become anti-American training camps where you can learn soulless, godless ideology, basically try every single drug under the sun, push the boundaries of indulgence culture, basically become a very unhappy person by the time you're a junior or senior, and you can't wait to get out. And chances are you'll have a sick and twisted worldview. Those that don't, join Turning Point USA. Say ended up being real winners, get out of college really quickly, and they get out of debt, and they end up succeeding. And they end up, when I ask them the question, 99% of Turning Point USA leaders that exit college, I say, was college worth it? Say, oh no, my parents made me go. It was not worth it, but I have all this debt. I'm going to pay it off. I'm not going to play the victim. And so take that into account for whatever it's worth. But a vast majority, 80 to 90% of people that go to college, consider it to be a total ripoff and a total scam. I'm not saying that all colleges are that way, but we need to vastly reconsider the way that we approach higher education. That was a great decision I made when I was 18 years old. And for those of you that are worried about it, what your parents are going to say, If you're only going to college because your parents are forcing you, that's a really bad reason. Have them reach out to me, freedom@charliekirk.com, and they need to make the argument to me, while you need to go in debt for whatever reason. Because right now, especially during this pandemic, especially during the bad economy that we're about to enter, and hopefully we'll get out of it very quickly, it is not a good time to go into debt, to borrow money you don't have, to study things that don't matter, to find jobs that don't exist. That is not a good time to go do that. Again, reading off the questions from freedom@charliekirk.com. And also, going back to that student loan question, that's why you guys got to go to credible.com/Charlie. Next question.
All right, Sandy from San Francisco has a question for you. Charlie, my friend is fighting depression because of the shutdown, and I'm afraid that she might inflict self-harm. What should I do?
Well, you're from San Francisco, so Sandy, if you believe that you being with that individual will lesser the likelihood of them inflicting self-harm, then go see that individual, because you have to make the decision whether or not some silly city ordinance that might not allow you to go over to that person's house is more important than that person's life. The moral thing to do would be to civilly disobey the government ordinance, take the risk you might get a $500 fine for leaving your house, go to that person's house and spend time with that person. And so yes, Media Matters, listening to this right now, I am encouraging people, if you think someone is about to commit suicide or inflict self-harm, disobey the government so that people can live. Yes, that is the moral thing to do. Don't just rely on phone calls. Of course, stay in touch with them. But if you truly have someone in your life that is experiencing social anxiety and social isolationism and they're overindulging in alcohol and drugs, go physically go see them, okay? Now, of course, I hope you don't have COVID. So just go wear a mask, okay? Go see them with a mask on. What I'm saying is this, is do not allow a government ordinance to destroy, if not eliminate, a human being that you care about. That you will not be able to live with yourself. You will not be able to think about it clearly. And it is the moral thing to do. It's what I've done to people that I know in the local area that are experiencing this as well. And I could tell you that it is the correct response to that sort of circumstance. I know that depression is on the rise. I know a lot of people that are battling with it right now, and that we're going to see the suicide rates. And I'm afraid that the suicide rates, because of the economic destruction out of the Chinese coronavirus, might exceed the actual death count from the Chinese coronavirus. We don't have those numbers yet. That's a conjecture. That's a guess. And I also base that on personal experience and anecdotes. Again, freedom@charliekirk.com. freedom@charliekirk.com is the email. Next question.
Have you finished Ozark yet, Charlie? Beth from the Ozarks wants to know.
Well, Beth from the Ozarks, you would probably be disappointed to know they didn't actually film the Ozarks in the Ozarks. They film it in Georgia, probably because of the tax credits that they get in Georgia, because they're trying to create a new Hollywood. And because of that, they're importing all these Marxists to Georgia that actually might turn the state blue. I am going to do a full Ozark review in a future episode, but I will give you a taste of what it is. But first, when running a business, you know HR issues can absolutely kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and more. HR managers are not cheap. As you know, an average of $75,000 a year. Bambi, which is spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small business. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day all for just $99 a month. I can tell you the HR that we have at Turning Point USA has been benefited from the service Bambi. Month to month, no hidden fees, cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time on HR compliance. Let Bambi help. Get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambi.com/Kirk right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambi.com/Kirk. Spell BAM to the BEE.com/Kirk. So the Ozarks, I'm going to do a whole episode on Ozark. It's one of my favorite shows I've ever come across. Kudos to Mr. Producer for recommending it to me. It's phenomenally well produced and well written, very thoughtful and awfully realistic. I think that's what makes it so captivating. Look, it reminds me of Breaking Bad, but it's so different than Breaking Bad. For those that haven't seen Ozark, here's a spoiler alert. You guys can listen to this, and I'll try my best not to spoil the show for you, but I'll just give you kind of the overview, if you will. If you were to watch a trailer, you could decipher basically what I was saying, but I have obviously more insight from watching it. It's similar to Breaking Bad in the sense that you have a male protagonist that has family obligations, that is willing to push moral boundaries to make sure that his family is protected and succeeds. It's totally different, though, than Breaking Bad, because in Breaking Bad, you have the devolution and almost the creation of a character that starts in the hero arc and goes to the villain arc, and you end up cheering for the villain throughout the many seasons of Breaking Bad. Starts as a total character of innocence, Mr. White. You couldn't think of someone that has a more innocent-sounding name than Mr. White, with a full head of hair, who is perfectly healthy as a school teacher, who ends up, of course, losing his hair, changing his name, ends up pushing the moral boundaries, and becomes the worst thing in society that you could possibly become, which is a murderous, meth-dealing cook, if you will. And then you end up cheering for this guy. You actually end up, yes, please get the meth out. I hope the meth is totally pure. It's like, oh my gosh, as a viewer, you're like, what am I doing? I'm cheering for meth distribution. What Vince Gilligan did was so amazing. We end up cheering for the person that becomes the villain, and the villain becomes the hero in a very backwards way. And this is very similar to The Sopranos. Breaking Bad and The Sopranos are two of the most popular shows in television because it cuts you so deep, because it's different, because you're actually cheering for the horror. You're cheering for the bad guy who is the good guy, and it's very well done. This is similar but different because the protagonist is a male figure who does whatever it takes to protect his family, but as of from where I'm at in the current season, I've not finished it yet, he still is reluctant to fully indulge in adultery, in murder, and in some of the other kind of just what some would call the worst sins a human being can commit. What I if I had to kind of What I love about Ozark as well is it's similar to the show Fargo, where the terrain, the culture, and the city are actually a character. Fargo, the television show, the accent to the nomenclature to the culture, everything about it ends up being a character that is woven into every single scene, to how people act, to what they drink, to the word selection. My one piece of feedback that's negative, there's way too much swearing. I mean, I understand. It's every other word, for goodness sake. Maybe that is actually how people talk in Ozark, Missouri. But it's hard. That's a tough thing to watch. The actual physical lens of Ozark that you watch through is actually a dark lens. You could tell that almost every single scene is filmed through a darker lens. They actually, when they're in the editing process, they make it at least a couple degrees darker for a good reason. And so there's a lot of different character arcs. Reconciliation is one throughout. Second chances, forgiveness is something that is a big theme throughout Ozark, at least in the phase that I'm in. I'm on episode 5, 6 in season 2, so I have a lot left to go. But the biggest kind of theme, if you will, that I think is one of the greatest takeaways, which is all throughout the protagonist, Marty Bird, which is, at what point do you give up? When you think that things go wrong, and at least for the point that I'm at, and everything that's being thrown at him, he remains so unbelievably sober, and not sober through alcohol consumption, but just sober in his approach, calm, cool, and collected, and calculating, despite just unforeseen obstacles that are thrown at him. And there is some similarity though, where you do have law enforcement that does act in malevolent and in, let's just say, borderline illegal ways in Ozark, and that is similar to other shows as well, where you end up cheering for quote unquote the bad guy and not the good guy. And then there's some very thought-provoking kind of scenes where you have the children that start to act like the parents, and of course the protagonist in Ozark is a money launderer, and the whole question that is posed, that is a very subtle question throughout the television show, which is that, is it actually unethical to launder money? That is a very interesting question that is asked, because it talked about money velocity and money circulation and how the economy can benefit through it. And through his son, those arguments are actually made, and through the creation of shell companies. And Marty describes himself, well, I make sure businesses actually pay their taxes. It's very, very interesting. Very thoughtfully written, I have to say. It's not just another popcorn television show. You can tell why Netflix invested season over season from it. I only came in contact with it in the last couple of weeks. I never even heard it existed up until a couple of weeks ago, which is very, very customary for a television show. Game of Thrones did not even get popular in the zeitgeist of America until season 5, and then it just caught on fire. It kind of goes similar to a chart that we've been seeing on TV recently, where it starts slow and then grows exponentially. I will do a full diagnosis on Ozark soon, but I do have to say it is a phenomenal show, very well written, and I encourage people to watch it, because it's not just popcorn television. It's thought-provoking. It pushes the boundaries. It keeps you on your edge. It keeps you on the edge of your seat, but also it challenges your maxims, and I think actually makes you smarter and wiser and more intelligent after you watch it. Okay, last question. Again, freedom@charliekirk.com. What is the last question?
Charlie, what is the significance of lower interest rates? I don't quite understand if it means anything for me or for students in general. Thank you, and that's Robbie from Arizona.
Well, your student loan interest rate, if that's what you're talking about, it will be probably unaffected, because your student loan interest rates are mostly processed by the federal government. Here's the easiest way to explain interest rates. And again, I could do a whole podcast on economics, so please email me your questions at freedom@charliekirk.com for your economics questions. Here's how you explain interest rates. It's the price of money. That's all it is. It's the price of borrowing money. When you have high interest rates, there's a high price, and also it is how much money you could possibly get when you save. So lower interest rates are supposed to incentivize borrowing and spending, where higher interest rates are supposed to incentivize saving and not as much spending. So interest rates, when they're lower, they could potentially create inflation, because there will be more money velocity and an increase in the money supply through the instruments of the banking system. Far more complex than what I'm actually talking about here. This is an accurate, though, summation of it. There's so many other requirements, FDIC requirements and singular and tertiary monetary influxes, M1, M2, M3, through the central bank, Federal Reserve, and all of its different branches and affiliates. Not going to get into that right now, but just so you know, when interest rates go down, that is a canary in the coal mine that eventually we are going going to experience some inflation, if not hyperinflation. And if you lower interest rates and economic growth does not keep pace with those interest rates, you absolutely will experience inflation. And that's one of the reasons why we didn't experience very much inflation over the last couple of years, which is why they were steadily ticking up interest rates in anticipation that eventually we would have to have inflation and would have to contract the money supply. But that is the best answer I can give in a short period of time. If you guys want to ask more questions about it, you can go to freedom@charliekirk.com. I'm happy to do a deeper dive on interest rates and the role that they play. The Austrian economists would argue that you can't play games with interest rates. They are so fundamental to everything and they should be all privatized. The Chicago School of Economics would argue that interest rates should be fixed and not played with, but they still should be managed and low, but something you can predict. The Keynesians would say, play games with interest rates. What does it matter? You need to do what it takes to try to essentially stimulate the economy for any means necessary. So, everybody, thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. And please type into your podcast provider, Charlie Kirk Show, and hit that subscribe button. 5-star ratings. Everyone does that. We can beat Joe Biden. We can beat Joe Biden in the podcast charts. And email us. I see these emails myself, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. God bless.
Hey, I got a new podcast coming. It's called Theory.
Don't you know?
This is Theo Rossi. Our world is changing. For many of us, it'll never feel the same. The important thing to remember is that we are all in this together. And that's some of what I want to talk about on my new show, Theory. We're going to discuss the things that no one ever does. The real talk, the sacrifice, and the struggle that everyone goes through. My life has kind of put me in a unique position to see things honestly. This is Theo Rossi, and my new show, Theory, launches on April 8th, officially on Spotify, Podcast One, and Apple Podcasts.